Hello, everybody, and welcome to the debut edition of the Announced Table Podcast. That's right, it's a wrestling podcast covering historic events in professional wrestling. My name is Brad Gilmore, and I'm joined by my co-host,
Kyle Hubbard.
Kyle Hubbard. Now, a little background, Kyle, of how this podcast came to be. First off, my name is Brad Gilmore.
Yes, sir.
I host another podcast called The Brad Gilmore Show on Demand with Peaches and DJ Motai.
Plug away,
which you can subscribe to on iTunes. Now, you've been on the show several times.
Several.
And your last visit was a couple weeks ago, or I guess last month when they're hearing this. And you and I started talking about professional wrestling or sports entertainment.
Whatever you prefer.
What do you prefer?
I prefer professional wrestling.
You know, I was watching, this is going to get off track for a second, but it's fine. I was watching the best of, I think, best of Raw and SmackDown 2011.
Okay.
On, or 2012, one of the two, on Netflix. And John Cena was cutting a promo on The Rock for WrestleMania, right? And he kept using terms and he kept apologizing to the back. And one of them was, I do this for everybody. I know you're going to get mad at this in professional wrestling, right?
No, John Cena said that?
Yeah, I was like,
which one was it, 28 or 29? Do you remember?
28. It was
okay,
28.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely. But anyway, we're trying to cover we started talking about professional wrestling on
right.
the show, and then we realized we have a natural back and forth for it.
Right.
We both love it to death.
To death.
To death. Do us part from wrestling. And so we decided, why not give people insight on our conversations, which we've had hours of phone calls and talks in person about wrestling. Why not let everyone hear it?
Exactly, because it's so informative.
It is informative. I like to think that out of everybody I talk wrestling to, me and you have probably the best conversations.
Absolutely.
About
it. And now we're just taking that, what we already like to do, and we're recording it, and we're giving it to the masses.
Exactly, and that's what we're here to do. This is the Announced Table Podcast. Now, Kyle, we got to let them know it's not going to be a whole week-to-week recap of Raw and SmackDown and Impact.
That's not the goal, because you can get that in many places.
There's a lot of wrestling podcasts.
There are.
I'd like to think out of the whole podcast world, there's probably more wrestling podcasts than anything.
I think that's a safe bet.
I think so. Do you listen to any wrestling podcasts?
Absolutely. I listen to the Stone Cold Steve Austin podcast.
Do you listen to the family-friendly one or the Unleashed?
I listen to both.
Both?
I'll take them both. Yes. And I like Colt Cabana's The Art of Wrestling a lot as well.
Art of Wrestling is a great podcast.
And I'm looking forward to listening to Chris Jericho's shortly.
Have you not listened to Talk Is Jericho?
Not yet. I kind of want some episodes to build up, so I kind of have a catalog.
You have four. So I'm at
the
time.
Oh, there's four now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you got to excuse us, fans. We're actually recording this episode in advance.
Right.
We're getting ready. We want to get everything together before we just have this huge launch. But we are recording this the day after Christmas.
Right.
Merry
Christmas.
Merry Christmas, belated. I don't want to bring the mood too down, but I do want to dedicate this podcast to a friend of mine and a friend of family who passed away yesterday. His name's Paul. He was my grandmother's boyfriend type thing.
Okay. Yeah.
And I love him to death. So I want to dedicate this episode to him. But moving right along, we decided to do this podcast, and we're covering historical and significant events
right.
in pro wrestling. So the build up to the matches, what happened behind the scenes, in the ring, on camera. We want to know about it all, and we want to tell y'all and discuss about it. So you can expect us to do stuff like what, Kyle?
Like the Montreal Screwjob.
Montreal Screwjob, definitely.
You know, maybe Bash at the Beach 2000, where Hogan had a little episode with Vince Russo.
Which then Booker T became champion that night.
You know, historically, things that changed the game of professional wrestling. We want to analyze these moments and go into why the ripple effect is still being felt today.
Exactly, and we want to maybe even talk about, you know, like the Russo thing, like what happens backstage, because
right.
we can all see what happened in the ring, but what prefaced that, you know, to happening?
Right, exactly. And I think for fans like you and I, and probably a lot of our listeners, really the storyline encompasses what goes on the camera and what doesn't happen on the camera. You know, that's, I think, for people like you and I, that is what's so fascinating about professional wrestling.
I was listening to something, and there was a term used called shooting in the ring, right? And it was pretty much where real life starts to come out on television and storylines. And I think whoever I was listening to, which is one of the podcasts, because I do listen to wrestling podcasts. I listen to Steve Austin, listen to Talk is Jericho, listen to Colts. I listen to a local one called Houston Wrestling Radio, Attitude Era podcast, which is another good one covering historical events, but in the Attitude Era.
Sure.
They were talking about how the whole thing with Daniel Bryan not being the face of the company and blah, 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 how all that was real life stuff that they just brought into the ring.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, when that stuff mixes together, that's when you get really fascinating and memorable things happening in professional wrestling.
Oh, most definitely.
Looking back at the Montreal Screwjob is the best example of that.
Have you ever seen the actual match?
No. You know, I haven't, actually.
I watched it for the first time maybe 2-3 weeks ago. We'll definitely have our episode on the Montreal Screwjob.
Of course.
So we'll save all that talk. I did want to say, Kyle, tell them a little bit, what's your background in pro wrestling? How'd you become a fan and all that?
You know, I've been a wrestling fan for as long as I can remember. My memory of professional wrestling goes all the way back to Hulkamania. And I think initially it was my older brother, who has like 6 years on me. He was really, really into it, and I kind of mimicked it. And then around the time I was 12 and I was kind of forming my own taste was the Attitude Era.
Yeah.
And that's when I was absolutely devoured every single wrestling thing I possibly could. And I mean, really, I've been hooked ever since, and for different reasons throughout different parts of my life, you know?
Oh, most definitely. Now, I can remember, I think I was a first grader, right?
Okay.
And maybe even earlier than that. And we have a few years difference in our age.
Sure.
But I remember turning on the television and seeing this guy walking around in black underwear with a shaved head and just flicking people off. And when you're in first grade, you really don't understand that. But then at the same time, you're like, whoa, what is that? You know? And I remember going to my first grade class and talking to a friend of mine who we both know, Avery Davis from 2011.
Shout out, Avery.
And we both were wrestling fans, and that's how we became friends. You know?
Wow, okay.
And through wrestling. So that was my earliest memory. And then I kind of remember starting to watch it more and more. I caught kind of the tail end of the Attitude Era.
Okay, sure.
Like 99, 2000, 2001. And I didn't even know what I was watching. And to me, I was just like, wow, I love this thing. It's like people fighting and people, I think, you know, kidnapping daughters and crucifying them in rings. Like, I didn't know what it was. When did you find out wrestling was a work?
You know, I can't remember specifically when it happened. I know it was really, really early on. And honestly, it never bothered me. You know, I almost think that I liked it more when I found out it was fake.
Because you're like, wow, this takes a lot of skill to be able to do.
Yeah. And, you know, then you start to get attracted to the other aspects of it. Like, if this is fake, then who's the one writing all this stuff? Who's coming up with this and that and blah, 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 blah. So, I mean, I don't remember when I found out it was all fake, but I never cared ever.
Did you ever, like, defend it being like, no, this is real?
I tried to defend it in the sense that it wasn't something silly and something that should be scoffed at. You know, I think my go-to defense was, well, all the movies that you watch are fake. They're all characters that were created by somebody. You know, everything was predetermined in a movie. Why is it so much different for wrestling? I think that was my defense, you know?
And you know what's funny is so many people to me that I talk to, like who were fans back in the day or just casual fans now, when they know it's a work or fake, but they don't know what's fake about it. Like, some people still don't know that winners are predetermined.
Really?
Oh, so many of my friends that I talk to who aren't huge fans, who just watch back in the day, they don't know that the winners are predetermined.
But they still have an idea that it's fake.
But they know it's, you know what they think is fake? The actual, like, the moves, like the hitting and the bleeding.
So are they thinking that they're never getting hurt ever? They're just
It doesn't hurt at all.
But they're wrestling on a mat made of pillows.
Exactly. And you know what's another interesting thing? We were talking about this before we started rolling. Like I said, this is we're doing this in December. This is going to come out in January. But the last pay per view that we had was a WWE TLC, and both of us are Houston, Texas natives.
Right.
We still live here in Houston. I was at the TLC pay-per-view, and something I noticed that was interesting was after every match, and you don't see this on TV, But after every match, they change the mats.
Really?
They unstring them, take the whole mat off, and there's like 8 mats stacked up throughout the whole night. And they just take them off after each match.
So they just peel away a layer?
Yeah, they unstring it, boom, peel away a layer. Unstring it. And the first time they did it, they took a layer of the mat and the apron off completely.
Wow.
And they had another apron on. I don't understand what... I was thinking maybe if someone was bleeding or I don't know, you know. But I've never seen that.
So by the time they get to the main event...
It's one mat.
It's just one mat. But the first match is however many they start with.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's crazy. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I guess because I remember reading something in Bret Hart's book that like a family member of his, like a little cousin or something, like they were playing on the mat that they had out in the backyard, and he like scraped his elbow and got like this horrible staph infection and ended up dying. So I'm thinking I'm thinking maybe they take them and burn them or something.
Yeah,
like
it's got to be a sanitary thing. Like it's actually a good thing that they do that. You know, sure those mats are disgusting.
Oh yeah, think about it. Just people rubbing all over.
Yeah,
them.
Sweaty. No, no.
I guess I want to tell people who are listening to this, one, this voice you're hearing right now is Brad Gilmore,
and this is Kyle Hubbard.
Exactly. So that y'all gonna have to remember that throughout the duration of this show. Right. Also, I want to let y'all know I have a wrestling background as well. Like I said, saw Steve Austin, and for the past year, a little more than a year, I've been working for Booker T, WWE Hall of Famer, 6-time world champion, for his promotion here in Houston called The Reality of Wrestling. I'm the ring announcer. So it just makes sense to call this the announce table.
It's perfect.
Because that's what I sit next to the commentary table.
Yeah.
And you actually recently had your first experience at Booker T's ROW for our annual show, Christmas Chaos 8.
Yeah, I did, and it was a great, great night.
Yeah, we had Michael Cole, Stevie Ray, The Usos, Boogeyman, Shelton Benjamin.
That's an all-star cast right there, not to mention all the great local guys.
And all the great local guys who just bust their ass in the ring for the fans, because that's what this whole wrestling thing was about.
Absolutely.
What'd you think, though, of Reality Wrestling first show?
I loved it. Courtesy of Mr. Brad Gilmore here, I had front row tickets, and I was right up the closest that I've ever been in my entire life, in real life, to professional wrestling.
Yes.
You know, it was an amazing experience. Seeing Shelton Benjamin was awesome. I've always been a huge Shelton Benjamin fan.
I know you're a Benjamin guy.
Yeah, I am.
You like the technical guys.
I am. I like him. And it was great to see him live. It was crazy to see Boogeyman live and still in the same gimmick, you know, still to the nines with
still
it.
Still looks great. You know, yeah, he still has that whole look. It was a great show. And, people, y'all can go on realityofwrestling.com and see the show for yourself if you weren't there.
Sure. And I don't want to just harp on the guys that we all know from WWE because, I mean, those local guys were great. You know,
yes. Everyone, that was my favorite event that I've been a part of in professional wrestling. Kyle Hubbard, you can see yourself on the broadcast, by the way.
Perfect.
You have a nice little cameo when the Usos come out.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah, just great timing for you. I encourage y'all, go check out realityofwrestling.com. And if you're listening to this and you want to be a sports entertainer, Booker T trains people still to this day. So go to realityofwrestling.com and you can check out more about that. But off of that, at this TLC pay-per-view, right?
Yeah.
There was an historic match. It saw Randy Orton versus John Cena in a tables, ladders, and chairs match for the WWE and World Heavyweight Championships to unify them together to make one belt.
One belt. One and champ. Champion of champions,
the champion
baby.
Of champions. Now, before, we didn't know what we were going to call him. Was it going to be the unified champion? Was it going to be the undisputed WWE champion, the undisputed World Heavyweight Champion, or the champion of champions?
A lot of possibilities here.
A lot of possibilities, but you actually, on the Brad Gilmore Show, picked the right one.
The most elegant one that they could have went with.
The WWE World Heavyweight Champion.
I'm so glad they went with that. It almost shows restraint on their part to pick something that makes complete sense.
They did. They went with the sensible thing for once.
For once.
For once in WWE history. Now, Randy Orton left that pay-per-view victorious.
Right.
What did you think?
I thought it was going to be Cena, so I was definitely surprised.
But you didn't think that they were going to be unified.
No. Yeah, that's true. That's true. I definitely thought that they were going to do a switch around. I thought that they would hold off on the unification for as long as possible for WrestleMania 30. Just because that's such a marquee thing, you know, the unification. And they only had a month of build-up for that.
Yeah.
But with all that said, I'm glad that they were unified, and that is, you know, now moving towards WrestleMania season, there's just one big belt.
Were you disappointed that the next night on Raw there wasn't a huge unveiling of a new championship
belt? Yeah, because, I mean, when he's walking around with both of the belts, and I know that Chris Jericho did this when he...
was undisputed champion.
Right, when he unified the titles back in the day. I think it looks cool to walk around with two belts, but at the same time, it's just like this, what are they going to do to separate the belts, you know?
Yeah.
I want to see it all physically conjoined in one.
In one
belt. I think
belt.
That would really... officialize everything.
Because it is funny because you actually made a point here that they during the whole broadcast of TLC, there was not one mention at all of the real first undisputed unified champion, Chris Jericho, when he unified the WWF and WCW championships.
And doing that, he beat Rock and Stone Cold in the same night.
In the same night.
Which is, yeah, you know, this is a thing about WWE is the something that I think, you know, would really make an interesting topic is their just complete disregard for continuity, you know?
I heard someone say the history of professional wrestling is whatever WWE tells you it is.
Oh yeah, and they own everything, you know, as far as WCW footage, ECW, any promotions going
NWA,
back further.
Yeah.
So I mean, they get to control history. I just wish that they would honor history a little bit more, you know?
I do too. They didn't talk about Jericho. And what was funny was if you go and you look up the lineage of the World Heavyweight title on Wikipedia, you know, which is as much as people give it shit, it's a good source.
It's a great source.
It's a great source. Anyway, if you go look it back there, it says the World Heavyweight title was awarded to Triple H as the first World Heavyweight Champion.
And that's where the lineage started?
And that's where the lineage started for these last 11 years or whatever it's been. And it happened, for those wrestling fans who don't remember, is when Brock won the title. He decided he wanted to be only on SmackDown. He said, I don't like Raw. So Eric Bischoff, the on-screen general manager, awarded Triple H the World Heavyweight title, which was essentially the WCW championship.
It looked the exact same.
And
I honestly feel like the WWE flip-flops on that so much as well. Like, sometimes they want to honor the lineage that reaches beyond their own company. But then I've seen, like you said, on Wikipedia, and I think on WWE.com for quite some time, there was no, you know, any kind of history being...
No.
Yeah.
The first time I really even saw this, like, that there was more history beyond Triple H was building up to this match. They had these promos of going back to Ric Flair and Lou Thesz and Buddy Rogers or for whatever. And I was like, oh, is this all one title? Because what about the NWA title? That's still a thing today.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I like how WWE just decides to...
Picks and choose and whatever fits the story.
Yeah, I think, but, you know, they are the number one and really only wrestling company, you know, or sports entertainment company, and whatever they really do say matters. Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, there's no arguing. There's the number two promotion, TNA, is way...
It's just that.
It's not
number
even
two.
Close number two.
It's number two.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Yeah, it's not even like a scrappy underdog you can root for because it sucks.
There were some times where I did enjoy TNA wrestling.
I mean, I just remember TNA, they had that influx of, like, talent all at once. They had, like, Hogan, Hardy, RVD, Angle, Sting. Like, just, like, it was, like, pretty much WCW 2.0.
Yeah, top guy.
Yeah, but nothing ever happened.
No.
Yep.
Unfortunate indeed. But moving past that, what did you think about Randy Orton winning the WWE World Heavyweight Championship?
You know, it makes sense. I think it's good that it was somebody like Orton, somebody that's established with, you know, X amount of title reigns in the past, as the first
11,
person.
11, I believe.
Some ridiculous, you know, number that just doesn't even matter. But I think it's good to have somebody like that, like a benchmark, you know, like to be the first one, you know?
And you know what I noticed? In the pay-per-view, they were showing, like, John Cena's rise to the top,
yeah.
And they showed Randy Orton. And the promo packages were gorgeous.
Oh, beautiful.
They killed him.
That made me, like, I had already purchased the pay-per-view. I didn't see that until I was watching the pay-per-view.
Yes.
But if I had seen that beforehand, I would have been like, okay, I'm definitely buying this pay-per-view.
Yeah, and did you notice the same thing I did on Randy Orton's?
What's that?
They showed Chris Benoit.
His leg.
They showed his leg.
Yeah.
They showed, because you could tell he had the tights on with the four or whatever on it. And I was like, that's Chris Benoit.
I think that's the most Chris Benoit's been on TV in ages.
Because it's hard to not, like, because, you know, whenever they do Royal Rumble, they're always like, two people have won entering number one, right? And it only always shows Shawn Michaels. It never shows Benoit.
Sure.
And then the other, then whenever they talk about Randy Orton's first world title reign at SummerSlam, one of the biggest shows ever, right? 2004. No mention or show of Benoit. What do you think about that? I mean, you get where they're coming from a company standpoint.
Absolutely. If they're doing what they have to do, it sucks. It totally sucks, and I think it hurts people like Randy Orton. You know, if they could be like Randy Orton was the youngest world heavyweight champion, and he beat the legend Chris Benoit to do it, that would help his story so much, and just other things like the Royal Rumble. I think it hurts the product and, again, the history. That there has to be this big omission in such a guy that played such a huge role.
Because, you know, Shawn Michaels is coming out with his Mr. WrestleMania DVD showing all his WrestleMania matches throughout the years except for his WrestleMania 20 main event between him, Chris Benoit, and Triple H.
Yeah, I mean, it's a shame that there's just, like, all this history that is completely redacted. But it's a hard situation, you know. I mean, he did a horrible, horrible thing, and it's hard to want to associate anything.
It's hard. You know? It is hard. And now it's like almost like I think sometimes wrestling fans, though, forget about Chris Benoit entirely. You know, especially the young fans who probably don't even know who he is.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. Just because. But I think that's the goal.
The history is what WWE tells you.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's just it's a
shame. It's a shame because, you know, for somebody that I think was so beloved by so many people because he was this underdog, you know.
Yes.
And it was just like this, him winning and being in the main event was this unbelievable story that everybody could relate to. And he was the people's champion as far as I'm concerned.
Do you remember hearing about Chris Benoit's death?
Yeah.
Where were you?
I don't remember exactly where I was. It was in 07, so I was probably in my dorm room, actually. And I was probably just checking up on news, trying to see what the dirt sheets held for me. And, you know, initially it was just Chris Benoit's dead.
Yeah.
And then it gets more and more sinister.
I was actually at WWE Vengeance Night of Champions at the Toyota Center. Was
that in Houston?
That was in Houston.
Oh, wow.
The first Night of Champions, when it was Vengeance Night of Champions.
Okay,
and it was the last match that Chris Benoit was scheduled to be in on pay-per-view.
Right.
And I believe he was going to wrestle CM Punk that night.
Yeah, for the ECW
title. And I remember watching the show, and I vaguely remember Justin Roberts, the ring announcer, saying Chris Benoit is not able to make it. Or at least my mind tells me that.
Yeah,
you know how memories kind of get distorted.
Of course, yeah.
But I for some reason, I remember something like that, being in just for the live crowd. And then I remember Johnny Nitro.
Yeah.
Or Johnny, I think that was his name at the time. John Morrison.
Right.
Comes out and wins the ECW title.
Right.
I believe. I was like, he's an ECW guy? Like, what? And that was during the reboot, obviously, of ECW. And I just remember, what happened to Benoit, you know? And I was just so confused. And I turned to my friend. I'm like, I wonder what happened to Benoit. And then it came out the next I don't think it even came out the next night. I think it was Tuesday.
Because they had the tribute show for him.
They had the tribute show for him on Raw. And then I remember Tuesday, ECW opens up with Vince McMahon. Which at the time, though, if you remember, Vince was in a storyline where he died.
Right. Where he died. That's right. That is so right.
And so here he is breaking kayfabe, you know, pretty much, and says, you know, hey, well, you know, this is what happened, and blah, 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 and talks about the Benoit thing.
Was McMahon on the Raw before this, though?
I don't think so. I think, in my memory, the first time I saw him was
on
Tuesday
ECW.
On ECW.
Okay. On Sci-Fi.
Yeah, on Sci-Fi. Back when they spelled it, you know, like science
and
not S-Y-F-Y.
Right.
And I just remember being like, whoa. You know, Benoit died, and, you know, it literally just felt like Eddie died.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think in reality, it was maybe, how long was it? Maybe 2 years, give or take, a few months.
Maybe like a year and some months or something
like that. And, it felt, honestly, just like so close to each other, especially given their history and everything.
Yeah, you know, because they came up together, and then you got to think WrestleMania 20.
The iconic moment where they're hugging in the ring.
Yeah, one's world champion, one's WWE champion.
Great moment.
Yeah.
That it will forever be.
And literally,
never
within
talked about.
Two years of that moment, both of them passed away.
It's a tragedy of epic proportions. When you think about it like that, you know, when you have that image in your head, and just the 2 years later, you know, it's a shame.
It is.
Really is.
So, I mean, But when I did see that moment on that promo with Orton, I was like, wow, that's Benoit's leg. Like, I marked out for his leg. And I was like, whoa. No, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there are like a whole bunch of kids going, I wonder who that was.
For and they'll never know.
And they will never know. But Randy Orton, WWE World Heavyweight Champion, even though there wasn't really any talk of Chris Jericho. But they did come on WWE.com and did an interview with Jericho about unifying the titles.
Well, that's good. That's good.
I think WWE has this thing to where now they'll make a mistake on television and then they'll clean it up online.
Well,
because at first they didn't even say unification of the titles, and then Triple H did an online promo covering that mistake.
Yeah, yeah. Because I think everybody after the Raw where it was. When it was announced that the WWE champion John Cena would go against World Heavyweight Champion John Cena would go against WWE champion Randy Orton, I think everybody clung to the fact that they've never uttered the word unification.
Ever.
So everybody was like, okay, it's not a unification. They're being very, very specific not to use
those words.
Yeah, yeah. Obviously, it amounted to nothing that they didn't say that word. But they need to not do that. You know, if they make a mistake, they need to address it on TV, I think.
But to me, when I was thinking about it, and like I said, I don't want to spend so much time on current stuff.
Sure.
But when I was thinking about it, I was like, well, originally, Cena was supposed to be out for 6 months.
Right.
So that's from August to February, right?
Yeah.
So it'd been a long time for Cena to be out. So obviously this wasn't the plan at all.
No. And I think again, not to harp on it, but they were doing the face of the company storyline with Orton and Daniel Bryan.
Yeah.
But when you have Cena there as the World Heavyweight Champion, you can't very well have a face of the company and not storyline and not include the
John
actual
Cena,
face of the company.
Yeah.
So I do think that they had to adjust on the fly for Cena coming back and. You know, it's interesting to see what's going to happen from this point.
But I seriously did not expect a title unification so quickly. When Cena got the world title, I'm like, okay, so they're going to kind of build up some other guys
sure.
who aren't megastars. Like, I thought that Cena and Damian Sandow were going to have a program with one another.
Yeah, same here.
And, you know, but anyway, boom, they unify the titles. Whatever. All right, they're unified.
It's done. It's a done deal.
And you know what we're coming up on, though, by the time wrestling fans are hearing this? We're coming up on the, in my opinion, the second biggest show of the year, which isn't SummerSlam. SummerSlam, to me, isn't the second biggest show of the year.
I think WWE would disagree with you.
WWE will happily disagree with me. But, to me, the second biggest show of the year is the WWE Royal Rumble, which by the time they're hearing this is 11 days away or 12 days away.
Right.
And here, this is Tuesday, January the 14th.
Right.
When they're hearing this. And in 6 days, a return is happening.
Oh.
A big return.
Big return.
A huge, gigantic, animalistic return.
Nice. Nice.
You like that one?
I did.
An animalistic return of the one and only the animal, Batista.
Wow.
Batista's coming back to WWE programming.
Wow.
What do you feel about that, Kyle Hubbard? Batista, I believe, is a 6-time world champion.
Right. He held the WWE title at some point
He did.
You know, I am... It's always exciting to see people come back, but it's not like Brock Lesnar coming back, you know?
Do you remember the night after Mania 28?
Oh, God. I loved it. It was so great to see Brock Lesnar back.
Did you know it was going to happen?
I did. I think maybe like right before Raw started, I knew.
I didn't hear anything about it, and I remember like watching the Cena promo in the ring.
Yeah.
And then he was calling The Rock out, right?
Yeah.
And then he did, you know, Rock, come out here, shake my hand. It was just like, you know,
general. Yeah. A sound you haven't heard in a long time.
And I was like, what?
Yeah.
Lesnar, and I had no idea. And he came out with a brand new T-shirt, and he looked like Brock Lesnar, and he did like the thing at the top of the ring.
It was great. I loved it.
Boom. And and here's the thing about returns. You can go away as the worst bad guy. Everyone hates your guts. You just kick someone's mother in the face or whatever.
Right.
And you come back a month later, you're the biggest face of all time.
Huge pop.
Huge face pop. And it's just like, whoa, what's going on here? But anyway, so Brock Lesnar, boom, huge face pop. Cena still, obviously, baby face. And boom, F5 sets it up anyway.
Yeah.
But off of that, Batista.
Batista is back.
Batista's coming back, obviously, 6 days before the Royal Rumble.
Okay, yeah. So he's going to be in the Rumble.
He's got to be in the Rumble.
They love to throw people back in the Rumble. I mean, that's a historically thing. That happens all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I remember last year's Royal Rumble, we saw Goldust before he was back regularly on the road. We saw Godfather.
Oh, man. That's right. Wow. And then what are some of the best Rumble returns? Booker T was a good one. Diesel was good.
Booker T and Diesel in the same year was pretty good. Yeah. That's when they both left from TNA. And, and I...
Ouch.
I remember, I remember, I think TNA probably was trying to re-sign them or something.
Right, right.
And I think Kevin Nash made a comment of, I'm going to the Rumble.
Beautiful. That's a fun part about the Rumble, though. You know, who's going to come back? Obviously, I think Batista is a no-brainer at this point.
I remember one of my favorite ones, a couple of them. I remember it was like 2002. Mr. Perfect.
Yeah, he was 2002, and he lasted a long time.
He was in the Final Four.
That's beautiful. That's great. He's, man, I wish he had a longer run when he came back.
Yeah, I remember seeing Mr. Perfect on Raw and being like, whoa.
Yeah, he would have been good for the Intercontinental Division. He would have been great. I wish that lasted longer.
Me too. Mr. Perfect, that was a favorite Rumble return of mine. Who else came back? I know John Cena had a comeback in
the
Royal Rumble.
Right, that was a big comeback.
Edge had a comeback.
Okay, yeah.
Who else? Triple H had a comeback at the Royal Rumble.
It happens. It's a great thing that happens.
It's a great way to... Oh, Chris Jericho last year?
Yeah. Chris Jericho's always returning, though.
He always makes returns.
Yeah, I feel like every time I turn on Raw, it's Chris Jericho's back.
Yeah. Why do you think they don't use him in, like, the world title WWE picture? Because that program when he worked with Shawn and was the world champion was, like...
Really, really great.
And
really
I remember
good.
He and Shawn were working at the same time Edge and Taker were working.
Okay, yeah. And then... He 28, he wrestled for the title with Punk. Not that he ever had a run with it at that time period. But then 29, he lost to Fandango.
Yeah, so. And Fandango's debut match.
Oh, my God.
Did you not know that? That was
I didn't know it was his debut. I knew it was his pay-per-view debut. I didn't know
it was his debut for the company.
And he beat Chris Jericho.
At WrestleMania. It was also Big E Langston's debut match.
Really?
Oh, when he and Ziggler went against Team Hell No.
Okay, yeah. You know, I don't know. Chris Jericho, I think, is doing, like, he is, like, the most stand-up guy in the world because he puts so many new people over, but they do it so wrong, you know? Like Ziggler and Fandango have, like, historically big wins in their career over Chris Jericho, and neither one of them are doing what they're supposed to be doing, having beat the first undisputed champion. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Like, I think Ziggler should be so far.
Oh, yeah, right for now. Sure, for sure. And, like, when you beat Jericho, it should be, like, this landmark moment in your career. And I think if they did that with Jericho, he would be fine doing what he's doing now. But they just, I don't know, they're not having him lose to the right people, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. Especially when you give a huge WrestleMania push to Fandango going over Jericho, you're supposed to so capitalize off of that. But WWE recently has had this thing to where they'll build a guy up real quick.
Oh, yeah.
And drop the ball on
him. I feel like they've been doing that for years now. For years. I remember when Sheamus came around. And
oh,
he
got the biggest push.
And I was like, what the hell is going on here?
He won the title by technicality.
Yeah, and I was just like, who is this guy? I guess historically, WWE has done that in the past to great success, namely Kurt Angle, who shot up real fast, but was also Kurt Angle.
It was Kurt.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So. Something we did have, and I know we're kind of all over the place here in our debut pilot episode of the Announce Table. But hey, y'all, we're trying to figure this out. You know, this is something new for both of us.
Right.
This is Kyle Hubbard's first podcast.
Right. So come on now.
Cut him some slack. All right. Cut me some slack too. I'm not used to talking about wrestling, but we just kind of want to let y'all know, like, kind of get a gauge of kind of what fans we are.
Sure,
you know, because I think a lot of times, there are different types of wrestling fans.
Of course,
definitely. You know, let's ask this, Kyle, are you a The Rock guy? Are you a Stone Cold Steve Austin guy?
Oh man, this is probably the hardest question to answer. I love both of the guys, but I think I may have to go. With Austin, by a hair.
Why Austin?
I think his narrative was just a little bit more interesting, and I think some of my most fond memories, he's there. He's just tied up in them, you know? And that's not to say The Rock's not there for a lot of those as well.
Yeah, because they had a lot of moments together.
They had a lot of great moments together, a lot of, like, era-defining moments together. But I think, I don't know, if I had to sit down and compile a list of favorite matches, I think Austin might just beat Rock just by a smidge.
He could. Now, I like I said, the first person I ever saw on wrestling was Steve Austin.
Right, right.
So it's hard for me not to pull for him. But then again, I love The Rock's mic work. His stick work
absolutely.
Is head and shoulders above most people.
Oh,
you know
absolutely.
What I mean?
Absolutely, absolutely.
So, it's hard for me.
That's the hardest one.
That's
the hardest question to answer.
I got to go Austin, though.
Okay.
I do have to go Stone Cold. Just because it's, you know, he had a great run and he never came back and was like lesser of a...
Right, right. Which is an important thing. I think Austin left when he needed to leave, you know?
Yeah.
He didn't overstay his welcome, you know?
You think he's going to make an appearance at WrestleMania 30?
No.
No, not at all?
I don't think it's ever going to happen.
Even an appearance?
An appearance, maybe. Match, never. But I don't think he'll be at WrestleMania 30.
I doubt match. I do want to keep this segment maybe going because WrestleMania is in is it March or April this year? Do you know?
I don't know this year. It'll either be late March or early April.
So. But we're gonna have several podcasts in between then,
sure.
And I think we should start doing something.
Okay,
we should start fantasy booking WrestleMania 30.
WrestleMania 30,
and
okay.
Who we think is gonna be there, who's gonna be the matches. I'm going to put on the table right now what I think is gonna happen.
Okay,
is a rematch from WrestleMania 23, and it'll see Batista versus The Undertaker.
That makes a lot of sense. You don't think it'll be Taker-Brock, though?
I know there's been a lot of talk on the dirt sheets of Taker-Brock.
Right.
Would you like to see Taker-Batista? I mean, no. I mean, Brock-Batista.
No, not really. I mean, I'm sure it'd be fine, but that doesn't sell WrestleMania for me. You know who I think Batista's going to go against at 30?
Who?
Orton.
Ooh, for the title? Do you think
no,
Orton
not
be
for
champion?
The title. Not for the title. I think the title will be out of the picture at this point.
Do you think they're gonna get? Okay, let me ask you this: do you think Batista is gonna be a part timer or a full run? I've been reading that he's back.
So you've been reading that he's full time.
That's what I heard on a couple of the sheets, but I don't know for sure.
Oh man, I mean,
because his timing of coming back is a little suspicious.
Part-timey?
Yeah, it's a little part-timey.
Yeah. I'll be around for WrestleMania. I'll get the big paycheck, no problem.
Yeah, and then you won't see me for 7 years.
Right, yeah. Everything in my gut says part-time, but maybe I've just been so abused by The Rock and Brock at this point that
yeah.
I just don't think anyone's going to stick around for that long.
Yeah, but so you think Batista Orton?
I think more so than Batista Taker.
And you know what else I've been reading on the sheets of possible matches? I don't think they would do this. This doesn't make sense to me. But they said they would have a tag match
okay.
as one of the main events, and it'd be Cena Hogan versus X and X.
X and X. I don't want to see that. I don't want to see that.
I don't want to see Hogan in the ring anymore.
No, not at all.
I also
if he's going to be in the ring, that's the way to do it, though. But there's no way they're going to put Cena in a tag match for WrestleMania 30.
I've also been reading a wet dream of every wrestling fan might be coming true at WrestleMania 30.
Whoa,
and
yeah,
I hear Sting.
Sting. But I've been hearing Sting since, like, WrestleMania 21.
I know. We've all been hearing that. But what do you think? What do you think the likelihood is? He is in the last, year or two, has to be, of his career.
Yeah. I mean, this is something that I would love to ask Sting, is, like, how important it is to you to have just even a slight miniature run in WWE?
Because to me, he's the biggest star to never not wrestle for WWE.
Absolutely. No question about it. And I don't know. I would love to see that. I think that would be, like, the perfect way to end his career.
Yeah, Mania.
Mania, Taker.
Mania, Taker. Oh, that would be a great one.
I think that would be the thing everybody wants to see. Again, remains to be seen. I feel like we should start to be hearing stuff about that, like, about how solid it is soon, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, if we're already hearing about Batista, I really hope that Batista's not the big gun for WrestleMania 30.
I don't think that he can be the only gun.
No.
But there's also been a lot of talks of another. Here's another WrestleMania match that they've been talking of, and I would actually like to see it.
What's that?
Ryback versus Goldberg.
Yeah, I would like that enough. I mean, it makes sense. You know?
Yeah.
If they're going to bring Goldberg back, who else is Goldberg going to work with?
And it'd be the only way that Ryback could finally get over the Goldberg chance.
Yeah, they would definitely need to put Ryback over Goldberg.
Yeah.
That would be the tricky part.
Yeah, of Goldberg going for that.
Yeah.
Do you know in the history of professional wrestling, only 5 people have pinned Bill Goldberg?
Triple H, Kevin Nash, DDP?
Let's see if I can remember the list. It's actually random.
Okay.
It's like Kevin Nash.
Right.
Triple H.
Okay.
Booker T.
Nice.
Scott Steiner.
Wow. Who's the fifth one?
No.
Let's just make it up. The fifth one was Chris Jericho.
Yeah, or Disco Inferno.
Disco Inferno. There it is. Did Bret Hart ever pin Goldberg?
It might have been Bret Hart. I think that was the fifth one.
Okay. Wow.
Wrestling fans, don't kill our Twitter. Or you don't have a Twitter.
Yeah.
Don't kill my Twitter at Brad Gilmore with the actual answers, because I could be completely wrong. But I do remember it's only five people.
Number six is going to be Ryback, though. If there is a number six, it'll be Ryback.
What's your Fantasy Mania pay-per-view main event?
Oh, man. Currently? For WrestleMania 30?
Yeah.
The main event?
The main event the title.
For the title.
The WWE World Heavyweight Championship.
I know I want Punk in there. I want Punk in there. I mean, I guess Punk and Bryan.
Yeah.
But there's something about that just seems a little lackluster to me.
That wouldn't be Mania.
It doesn't seem Mania main event-ish.
You know what I could see?
What's that?
And I would actually be interested in this. Kind of a rehash of the WrestleMania 16 angle of a McMahon in every corner.
Okay.
Right? But we have Triple H in the corner of Randy Orton.
Makes sense.
Okay. Stephanie in the corner of John Cena.
That makes sense, too.
Okay. And just for the ultimate odd couple, McMahon in the corner of CM Punk.
That would be the ultimate odd. And then Linda with Bryan?
And then Linda with Daniel Bryan.
What would Linda's reason be for getting with Daniel Bryan?
She likes his hair.
Okay. Yeah, there you go.
She likes
captivating
his hair.
Professional wrestling. Right
there. Captivating professional wrestling. And boom, fatal four-way for the WWE World Heavyweight title.
That's not going to happen.
Oh, never in the history of
hope. That's not going to happen.
But a guy can fantasy book.
Sure. You know, it'll probably be CM Punk and Rey Mysterio.
Okay. Didn't they have a Mania match?
Maybe. They may have, actually.
Or was that Cody Rhodes? Cody Rhodes had one with Rey Mysterio.
Yeah, he did.
Anyway, but Mania is around the corner. But let's continue to see what kind of wrestling fans we are.
Sure.
And then we actually got to go over some terms of wrestling.
Yeah, because we want everybody to be on the same page as us.
We want to know, because we've been using a lot of insiders. But let's talk about this. Who are you out of these two? Were you a WCW guy, or were you a WWF/E guy?
Initially, like in the Monday Night Wars, I would say that I leaned WCW until WCW made it impossible to even sit through Nitro.
Was that before or after Ready to Rumble?
I think Ready to Rumble was it was around that time that the death rattle started, you know?
I think we need to do a Ready to Rumble podcast, because to me, that was such a significant event.
Really?
Yes, because then you had Arquette become the WCW champion.
Yeah, I wonder if WWE recognizes that in their lineage.
I highly doubt it.
Yeah, probably.
But anyway, okay, so you were a WCW guy. I've always been a WWEF guy. I watched some WCW, but like I said, I was at the tail end of the Attitude Era.
Right, so it was all trash by that point. Yeah. I think the turning point for me, like, may have been around WrestleMania 15, was when I was just completely like, okay.
Yeah, this is...
One is superior, obviously superior, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Okay, what about this one? This is an age-old question.
Okay.
The New World Order, also known as NWO,
okay,
versus D-Generation X, also known as DX. Which one were you?
I was NWO. I think looking back, I think maybe DX was better and a little bit more real in the fake world of wrestling. But yeah. So much of my memories of professional wrestling are tied up with NWO.
I am a DX guy.
All the way?
All the way. Now, here's another thing, though. Me looking back, I thought the NWO was cool.
Yeah.
Looking back, and I guess we're kind of opposite that way, because I grew up DX.
I appreciate DX more in retrospect.
And I appreciate what NWO did. And then I also see how they kind of hurt the company.
Oh, yeah.
At WCW, but...
yeah, I mean, the thing about DX is it never got to a point... Well, some people argue this, but never to the degree that NWO did, where it just became so watered down and... pretty much crippling to the product, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I don't think DX ever got that far. But there were a few members of DX who were members of NWO.
Right. Yeah.
You had X-Pac, right. Sean Waltman, Six.
Who was one of the original members of NWO.
Yeah, and then
early member, at least.
Yeah, and became a member of DX. I think there was actually two early... I think there's one guy who's an original member of both.
Who?
Ravishing Rick Rude.
Oh, that is correct. Yeah.
Ravishing
wow.
Rick.
The guy that was on Raw and Monday Night Nitro on the same night.
In the same night.
That's G.
Yeah, what a gangster.
That's, man. Ravishing Rick Rude.
And I didn't know that until I subscribed to WWE Classics on Demand, right? And they have this thing called the Monday Night War where they'll show you the episode of Raw and then the episode of Nitro. Right?
Okay, cool.
And you can watch them both the same, you know, and they go week to week.
Oh, that's awesome.
So I was watching Boom Raw. DX came out, did their shtick with Rick Rude and China and da-da-da-da. And then I switch over to NWO. I'm sorry, WCW. And boom, there's Ravishing Rick Rude with Mr. Perfect.
And he shaved his mustache, right?
And he shaved his mustache.
To show that it was live, yeah.
And I was like, what is going on?
Yeah, yeah.
What is going on?
See, that stuff, oh, man. See, stuff like that can, like, you know, surprise debuts, like Chris Jericho on Raw. Like, kids these days
don't get that.
They'll never experience that. And so it's such a shame.
And it's like anytime there is a return, there's always a huge build up to it.
Yeah.
Like RVD, there's a month build up.
Just, yeah, those mind blowing, like when Benoit and the Radicals appeared on WWF for the first time. I was like, oh my God.
Weren't they sitting in like the crowd?
Yeah, and they had on SmackDown. All had terrible shirts on. That's
they all had like Hawaiian some kind of
terrible shirts. That's one of the things I remember most.
Versace.
I was like, God, these guys dress like dickheads.
I even remember looking at Dean Malenko and being like, you look weird.
Dude. Yeah, yeah.
They all just kind of looked out of place. But
sure, but they're awesome.
What happened to Perry Saturn?
I don't know. You know, there's some thing on Netflix. I don't know if it's still on there. It was some like independent show, someone obviously with a lot of money put together that had like Nash on it. A bunch of guys from yesteryear.
It was the AWE Night of Legends.
Yes.
Yes.
Saturn's on that.
He is. I've never watched it. I've seen it all the time in Netflix.
I wouldn't watch it. It's pretty bad.
Is it that bad?
It's bad. And Saturn's match is especially bad. He's just not in great shape anymore. I think he had some dark years there.
Did he come with Moppy?
No, he didn't. He should have. That probably would have gotten him a little more crowd reaction.
Moppy was the biggest thing for Saturn. All right, let's spend these last few minutes. Let's talk about. Well, okay, wait, actually, before we do that, sure. I'm sorry. Ric Flair or Hulk Hogan?
I definitely know Ric Flair is the superior wrestler.
Yes,
but Hogan was. You know, was the guy.
Do you still think that Hulk Hogan is the biggest star in professional wrestling ever?
To me, yes. I do think that. But you have to understand, Hogan was like a god to me because I was like 6 years old and I was just like, who is this guy, you know?
Did you go and watch his movies when they came out in theaters?
No, it wasn't like that, no.
You weren't a Suburban Commando fan?
No, but we had like all like the action figures and the foam fingers.
No Three Ninjas High Noon to Mega Mountain for you?
I've seen that, but it wasn't like a top priority when it came out or anything. But to me, Hogan will always represent professional wrestling to me, you know? He was the first guy I ever cheered for.
In my later age,
sure,
I'm a huge Ric Flair guy.
Right, right.
I think Ric Flair may be my number one ever. Right.
Yeah.
But like you, growing up, it was hard to beat Hulk Hogan.
Hindsight changes everything because I'm not a Hogan fan by any stretch of the imagination now.
Yeah.
You know, like, but at that time, it's a Hulkamania. That's a huge part of a lot of people my age's life, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's like one of the biggest things of the 80s.
Sure, yeah.
The rock and wrestling connection.
Yeah, and there's no downplaying his contribution to wrestling as a whole, you know?
Now, let's go over a couple wrestling terms.
Sure,
okay? Let's give like them the basics, and then we'll think of some other ones. But at first, the first ones that come to my mind, the first two ones that everyone needs to know in professional wrestling, when you're listening to the Announced Table podcast with Brad Gilmore and with Kyle Hubbard, there are two terms you absolutely have to know to listen to this show, and that is babyface.
Oh, yes.
And heel.
Oh, yes. Oh,
now,
yes.
Now, Kyle Hubbard, tell them what a babyface is.
Babyface, in the most basic terms, is the good guy, the person that you are supposed to cheer for and that you want to see win.
And the heel is what?
The bad guy. The cowardly villain that you want to see get crushed by the babyface.
Are they always cowardly?
Not always. No. A lot of times they are.
Most
especially
of the
in
time.
WWE.
Most of the time it's the cowardly babyface.
Right, right. There's these archetypes that they, you know, like these overlaying things that a lot of these characters always have. But with all that said, it's not always there.
It's not always. Now, one thing I do want to say is that in wrestling, most 99% of the time, you're going to see a babyface versus heel.
Right.
Or a babyface tag team versus a heel tag team. Rarely do you get the babyface versus babyface.
Right.
Which is genuinely accepted by most people, though. You know, in a babyface match, you know, it's not like a weird match. You know, it's almost like, you know, Hogan Warrior.
Right, right, right. A lot of times that can be huge deals when it's babyface, babyface.
It can be huge. You know, even SummerSlam main event of this of 2013, Bryan Cena.
Right.
That's a face-face.
Sure, sure.
Rarely do you ever see, ever, especially in WWE, do you ever see a heel versus heel.
Yeah.
Why do
yeah.
you think that is? It's hard to cheer for someone?
I guess. I think it may just be hard to sell. You know, like, both of these guys are terrible. You know, both of these guys are assholes. Both of these guys should be beat, you know.
But did you notice at the Money in the Bank 2013 pay-per-view, the WWE Championship Money in the Bank was all baby faces?
Okay.
And the Money in the Bank for the world title, all heels.
Really?
Yes.
I did not notice that.
It was like Sandow, Cody,
right.
Real Americans,
okay.
Dean Ambrose,
okay, yeah,
and someone
yeah.
else, and then the other one was Christian, Daniel Bryan, CM Punk, RVD, Randy Orton.
That's a good match.
Chris Jericho, no, someone else.
Okay,
but yeah, so it was all faces, all heels, which I've never seen that before. I've never seen all heels in one match. Because I wasn't rooting for, I think I actually was rooting for Cody Rhodes. It was right when Cody Rhodes started to.
Right. There was cracks in his heel facade.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely cracks in his heel facade. But what are a couple other wrestling terms? There's going over.
Going over, which is basically. I guess there's two ways to look. There's going over and being over.
Explain the difference between the two.
Going over would be like, let's say Stone Cold Steve Austin just beat Chris Jericho. So Stone Cold Steve Austin is going over Chris Jericho.
Yes.
Because he defeated him. Yes. Going over, the winner goes over.
What's being over?
Being over is being in the good favor and the good graces of the audience. The audience likes you. You're a superstar. They'll cheer for you or they'll boo you, whatever they're supposed to do. They'll react the way they're supposed to react with you because you are over with them.
Exactly. Now, I did say something earlier. I said The Rock was a good stick man.
Right.
And what that means is a good guy on the microphone.
Right.
Giving interviews, better known as promos.
Perfect. Yes, promos, promos. Promos will be when a wrestler's out in the middle of the ring, microphone in his hand, talking trash to a wrestler, basically hyping up whatever match that he has coming up with whatever opponent he has coming up.
Definitely. Another one that's going to be used a lot is bump. Now, a bump is when a wrestler takes a fall of some sort on the mat or the ground.
Right.
A flat back bump is a bump, you know, where a wrestler lands solid on his back. But then it's like, ooh, that was a wicked bump, meaning it didn't look like he landed like he was supposed to.
Gotcha. Yes. Perfect. Perfect. And then there is a shoot.
Oh, a shoot, yeah.
Shoot is my favorite, and a shoot is basically when things go a little off the script. A shoot would be when a wrestler says something that is reality.
Almost an example of this that I can think of is when Bret and Shawn were going back, and we'll talk about this in the Montreal podcast, but when Bret and Shawn were going back and forth with one another in the ring one night, and Shawn says, Bret, even though you've had some sunny days, saying, you know, he allegedly had an affair with Sunny, which was the first WWE diva.
Right,
you
know, right, right.
But that was real life coming into the ring.
Right, it was a shoot.
It was a shoot.
Right.
Another one is the booker, who has the book, which is the guy who pretty much puts the matches together.
Mm-hmm.
He's the guy who says, all right, you're going to face this guy, and he's going to win this one, and this is going to take this storyline here.
The matchmaker.
The matchmaker is another good one. A storyline.
Storyline, yeah, that's a good one. The storyline would be the narrative thread and the reason why these two guys are fighting and everything that goes along with that.
Why don't you tell the people, Kyle Hubbard, what heat is?
Heat is, now correct me if I'm wrong, but heat is generally the negative reaction that a heel will receive from the crowd.
Exactly. An example from Wikipedia is like insulting a city or local sports team like wearing a Yankees jersey in Boston, Massachusetts.
Right, and the booze that he receives for doing that dastardly act is heat.
Yeah. What's a pop?
The pop is the opposite side of that. The pop is when the crowd goes crazy for a good guy.
And there's also a thing that Mick Foley likes to do called a cheap pop.
Right.
And it's where you really play to the crowd. It's like, you know, right here. In Houston, Texas.
Right, right. Ah! Yeah, just hearing the place that you live, that's a cheap pop, because you'll go crazy for it.
Yes, and cheap shot is also another, like, underhanded thing. Clean finish is where a wrestler goes 1, 2, 3 in the middle of the ring. No shenanigans.
No shenanigans. And they love shenanigans. And shenanigans oftentimes can lead to a swerve, which is when something completely unexpected happens in the world of professional wrestling.
Exactly. Now, those are just a few blanket terms y'all are going to need to know. I'm sure we're going to figure out more throughout the duration of this podcast. But anything you want to say in closing with our pilot episode of the announce table?
I just want to say that listen to us for some really good analysis of some of the most important moments in professional wrestling history.
Definitely.
This is our love, and I think we're both, Brad and myself, well-versed in this topic. We spend a lot of time watching DVDs, reading books, and all
Netflixing
that good stuff.
And,
yeah.
And a lot of DVRs of professional wrestling.
Right, right, yeah. We consume a lot of this stuff, and I think we're both very excited to break down some great moments in the history of professional wrestling.
Definitely. Well, Kyle Hubbard, I appreciate you for coming aboard and making this announce table podcast possible.
It's all you, my friend.
Make sure y'all also go check out my other podcast, The Brad Gilmore Show on Demand with Peaches and DJ Motai. If you like hearing about hip-hop, which is another thing, Kyle Hubbard's been on the show several times, go listen to Kyle Hubbard's podcasts.
Yeah.
With The Brad Gilmore Show. But for Kyle Hubbard, this has been Brad Gilmore, and this is the pilot edition of The Announce Table. Tune in to our next podcast later on this month. We appreciate your listeners. Make sure you rate, review, and subscribe to the Announce Table podcast on iTunes. We appreciate y'all. See y'all next time.